the college action is barred by that. We will not entertain arguments with respect to the claim preclusion, issue preclusion, or the post-fact. So if you would just limit your argument to the Kyles versus Humphrey.
Absolutely, Judge Epstein. May it please the court. My name is Jason Epstein, and I represent Richard Delaney Kyles, and opposing counsel, Judge Elrod, Judge Clement, and Judge Prado. When Your Honor says not to address ex post facto, it seems, I think the Humphrey case may very well touch on that, but of course, absolutely. And I did recognize that the lower court didn't address collateral estoppel, but because it can be raised at any time, I thought I better be prudent and raise it. But it did take up a lot of the briefs. With respect to Heck v. Humphrey, the cases often don't delineate. In Heck v. Humphrey, you cannot imply the invalidity of a sentence or a conviction. However, you can have an indirect impact. In the Edwards case, we say that even in Heck v. Humphrey, both myself and opposing counsel cited Orellano at length. And in that case, it says you can have an indirect impact. So what is the indirect impact then? That becomes the question. We've seen a lot of you can't imply the invalidity. And having said that, I believe this case is a case of first impression. At first glance, it seems like every other parole case where they're attempting to allege, you know, ex post facto to get out of prison. But in fact, opposing counsel didn't cite any, and I didn't cite any cases that are dead on point that support this. And what that is completely prospective relief, a declaratory action seeking purely prospective relief.
Is it seeking purely prospective relief? Because wasn't there also a declaratory judgment sought that he was caused irreparable harm of prolonged confinement? And would that be prospective relief?
Absolutely. And I consider this, and the whole of everything alleged by Mr. Kyles in his briefs, in his complaint, and in my briefs are evidentiary issues. And you might say, well, wait, what are you talking about? You can say, like say in a habeas case, that, you know what, I'm being kept in jail because of this particular act, and therefore let me out because of that. Everything, especially like the votes, the injury that he's incurring, they go to the evidence to say in the future, the probability of a future act. And in other words, and not only that, to bring suit, he would have to have harm, because the district court could bounce him and say, you have no claim here. This issue is not ripe. You cannot claim injury. You have to have an injury to come into court in cases such as this. But he's not saying I was injured and therefore that was wrong. He's saying this is not going correctly. I was injured. That doesn't mean that it's not right now. In the future, I want it to be done right. And in other words, you have to say something is wrong in order to say do it differently in the future. I guess is a long way to say that simple sentence.
So what is he seeking? Then what does he want? What is the remedy that he's...
An injunction against applying the recent change in law to him. Well, actually, I guess the court would rule to all capital cases, possibly, or even just to him. It could be a case solely based around Mr. Kyles. But
he
does
want
not...
to invalidate the old parole hearing?
No. And
a new hearing under the old rules?
No. Just an injunction saying at his next hearing, whenever it may be, that the court, that the parole board apply the old standard when he was convicted. Yeah, in other words, he doesn't want a new hearing. He doesn't want to go back and say, hey, I was previously wronged. I need to have a new one. That's determined by the parole board. I don't honestly know the exact time. It is. And honestly, I do not know that offhand. I honestly don't know.
Do you have any idea whether these favorable voting panel members are still on the, would be part of the panel that would be confected under the old rules?
I do not. And both, and I think it's Wallace versus Quarterman, Kyles v. Humphrey, Kyles v. Quarterman. They keep bringing this up, and that is a logical conundrum. It doesn't make any sense, because one, even if we could say the same panel is going to sit, we don't know what they're going to vote. They could vote something. They could change their mind, because they're human beings and they have the ability to have will. So they could change their mind. And of course, the court could later say, even though you proved that they were going to be there, they may change their mind, number one. Secondly, are we really going, I mean, as a matter of public policy, are we going to tell inmates that your parole officer, who denied you last time, this is where he's going to be and this is the time? I don't know that the jail will allow him. Secondly, third, can they find it out? Kyles had sought discovery repeatedly and was denied. In this case, he was denied. It was dismissed as frivolous. And, you know, they denied further discovery. once they do find out, it would seem like, you know, a rolling conundrum. The only reason we say that he had previous votes in the past is because it goes a matter of probability to the future. In other words, is there a...
You're just saying favorable versus non-favorable, not that the particular individuals who voted in your client's favor would be present or part of the newly composed panel.
Right.
Or the board, or whatever they're
absolutely.
Called.
Absolutely. And you know, the...
probabilities.
As a matter of probability, as a matter of evidence, just to say that these are the facts, and based on these facts, we can make a guesstimation about the future.
A three-member randomly constituted board is, you're more likely to succeed than a seven-member unanimous board. Doesn't your case come down to that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, and now that it's 18, you know, that's...
Yeah. And so it's just the numbers.
Yeah. It's a numbers. Yes. A numbers issue as to, because we're talking about a significant risk. Significant risk hasn't been defined. I attempted to define it. I say that it's greater than a risk. But it's not certitude. And to say that the same people are going to come and vote again the same way, that's asking for him to prove certitude, that it will occur. And that's not the standard. The standard is a significant risk. It is far below certitude. It's above any risk. I would say that you can't just throw something out. And this is a beautiful example. And I find myself surprised quoting Judge Scalia on the side of the defendant. But Garner v. Jones, it was an 11th Circuit case, and the defendant had committed a murder. He escaped, was out for 2 years, and the way they caught him was he committed another murder, and he was placed back in incarceration. I think it was his second parole hearing, he made the same claim, an ex post facto claim, and the 11th Circuit allowed it. I consider myself quite progressive, and I can't imagine I would have allowed that to happen because, in my opinion, there would have been no significant risk of an increased incarceration because he had no possibility of gaining parole. What parole board would allow that person out? And that's the calculus that I'm attempting to argue. In Kyle's case, we have 30 pages of accommodations. Not only did he get his GED, he got an associate's degree, then he got a BA, and now he has a master's. So those facts, it seems like I'm trying to say my guy's a great guy. No, it's a matter of probability. And because it could be completely...
Our ruling here today would only affect him. He's suing for his parole.
Absolutely, yes, yes.
Maybe this is a question better to the state, but how many inmates or former inmates or convicts would be in his position if this court were to rule that somehow they have to have a new parole board with only three members? Are there a couple of thousand people out there in his position?
I honestly do not know. It's all capital cases, but two things to that. If we assume, I don't believe it has to be everybody, because Wallace v. Quarterman says it's a case by case, it's factual basis, okay? So we could say it's only Kyle's gets this. But if we assume, because this is a court, a higher court, and it makes public policy, we can say two things. One is, it is just the capital cases. And two, it's a rolling closing window. Because if you weren't convicted in that time period, you know, year by year, the applications go down, and pretty soon, nobody can claim it anymore. So the burden on society is de minimis. You know, and of course, we're seeking justice. And there's thousands of these cases. And the fact that this is the first one of the hundreds that are out there, the thousands that are out there, I think speaks a lot. That there's not going to be a lot of cases where you can say, like Mr. Kyles has totally reformed himself. You know, he's spent 35 some odd years in prison of his sentence. So in Garner v. Jones, in the Supreme Court case where Justice Scalia made the opinion, now that was a case where they had changed the time period to have a new parole. First it was 3 years, and they changed it to 8 years, and the inmates were claiming, hey, now I'm going to be in jail that much longer. And the court said, well, you know what, we have discretion. And it wasn't discretion to say no. It was discretion to change the situation. The inmates in Garner v. Jones had the ability to petition the board and say, hey, I have new circumstances. I got my degree. I did something great. I did something for the community, and therefore get a new hearing. We have no discretion evidence in this case. We have no indication that the Texas Parole Board has any discretion, any flexibility. Garner v. Jones calls it discretion. I call it flexibility. The ability to be flexible to address those situations, such as Mr. Kyles, where, in fact, he should be allotted. And if he's not allowed, he's going to spend more time in jail.
But we don't have to get into the actual merits of it, right? We just have to make the heck determination. make the determination whether it's barred by Heck?
No, I think you would. You, in order to make the Heck determination, to say whether or not it makes an indirect impact or not, or makes it make, it implies invalidity of a prior conviction or sentence.
You can say it raises that, but we don't know if it's met here. And so you don't ever have to actually make a finding that it's...
I could absolutely see that. I could see this case may need to be remanded. It was dismissed as frivolous. There's probably a lot of factual development that needs to be addressed if, in fact, it was going to... if it was going to extend beyond Kyle's, it probably should be briefed out fully by an attorney. Mr. Kyle's is pro se up until fairly recently, until I came in this case late in the appeal itself. So it hasn't been really developed at all. Yes, yes. We can make an indirect impact, though. So I ask this court to look at the fact that when we say we're looking at purely prospective relief, we can have an indirect impact. And if, in fact, I also ask the court to consider this, and I say this in my brief, if, in fact, this is not the case, purely prospective relief, seeking only an injunction, nothing in the past. He doesn't want good time credits back. He doesn't want anything that happened prior to today. It's got to be in the future. If this isn't the case, then there is no case. It can't be any less intrusive. Then we're basically saying that Wallace v. Quarterman should be overruled because there is no factual basis to have this particular relief. And, in fact, I think it would also imply 1983 ex post facto cases such as this, and we would be abrogating 1983 alleging ex post facto. But Humphrey would be stepping on the toes of 1983 actions alleging ex post facto.
Got it.
Any further questions on this? So I think
please save some time for rebuttals if you want to.
Absolutely. Yes, I would like to do that if I could.
Whatever.
Thank you. Absolutely. I appreciate it. Thank you.
May it please the court. Our assertion is the district court correctly held that the rule in Heck v. Humphrey bars relief. Opposing counsel asserted that Mr. Kyles had only requested prospective injunctive relief. When this case was remanded back down by this court, at that time, Mr. Kyles amended his complaint. And he added a declaratory judgment with the request of not only, that this court find that they had caused him irreparable harm, but also that specifically the defendants had violated his constitutional right by failing to apply and ensure that the enforcement, of the correct statutory substantive formula in the particular parole suitability reviews in 2002, 2004, and 2007 were unconstitutional. So Heck says that if you necessarily imply the invalidity of a conviction or sentence, then the complaint must be dismissed or unless you can show that it's already been invalidated. He cannot show that it's been invalidated, and he has to show that it's either been reversed, expunged, declared invalid, or called into question by a federal court's issuance of a writ of habeas corpus. And he has not been able to show that. And in fact, this court has already determined in Kyles v. Quarterman, which is not in the record. This court made its decision in August of 2008. The citation is 291 Fed Appendix 612. They determined that Kyles is not entitled to a grant of federal habeas relief, and that because there is no sufficient risk of increased confinement, and that he has failed to present evidence in the state habeas proceedings that the three board members he obtained votes from would be the same people on the three-person panel appointed by the board to consider his parole.
Now he's abandoned that.
I'm sorry, pardon me?
Today he's abandoned that argument.
Okay.
He says it doesn't matter whether they're there or not.
Well, our assertion is that if either there or not, I mean, it's still, it's heck for, well, pardon me, We would assert that there's more than an indirect impact here. That if this court grants him the relief that he is requesting in the form of the declaratory judgment, not just the prospective relief, in the form of the declaratory judgment to say that back in 2002, 2004, and 2007, the application of 508.046 in those review proceedings were unconstitutional, then it's going to have the effect of having him being immediately released. It's going to invalidate those proceedings.
But he says he's not seeking that. That he was only using that to show the harm to justify the prospective relief. Can we rely upon his assertions that he's not seeking that immediate relief?
He may not be seeking. I would say no, Your Honor, that we can't rely on that, because the next logical step is that if this court grants that relief, then there is going to be an invalidation of those proceedings. And he got the two votes from the original office. The original article that was in effect, the original Texas criminal code said, pardon me, that a person would be eligible for or suitable for release once they receive the two votes out of three. So even though he's saying that he is not requesting a speedier release, the effect of finding that those review processes are unconstitutional would, inherently make him available for release, because it's going to invalidate those proceedings.
Well, he would still need to have another parole hearing. And the original panel that remanded this case said that Mr. Kiles does not seek to invalidate prior parole proceedings. So to that extent, that's the law of the case, and it was affirmed today by counsel for Mr. Kiles that that's not what he's looking for.
Well, we would, if he's not seeking that, our assertion is that even if he's not seeking it, once this court orders that, it's going to have a widespread effect. I mean, it will have if he's not seeking it, if this court grants his request for even this prospective injunctive relief, and as you questioned earlier, how the opposing counsel, how many people would be affected by? There's over 153,000 inmates in the state of Texas.
That are on death row?
No, Your Honor.
We have a lot, but I don't think it's that many.
153,000 total. For the capital cases, I don't have the actual statistics, but you can imagine with the vast size of the system alone that there's going to be several, probably thousands of inmates that are serving a capital felony conviction. And since he is requesting prospective injunctive relief, we would contend that it's not in the interest of the public interest to grant him that, because it is going to have a snowball effect. It's going to apply to all these other inmates. And when he said that, well, it's going to tap out at some point because Mr. Kiles was convicted in 1976. He, his eligibility is not an issue here. He was eligible for review in 84. But this 508.046 was not enacted. It was enacted in 1995, but it didn't go into effect until 1997. So you're going to still have individuals up until 1997 that the old Texas Criminal Code procedure 42.12 is going to apply to. So this will be, a continuous problem, and it will affect a larger group of inmates other than just Mr. Kiles.
Of course, that means he would still have to survive the other grounds that were suggested by the magistrate, which were never considered. So this court would simply, if it were to rule against you, send it back, and the court would reconsider the reasons the magistrate gave for dismissal. So Mr. Kiles would still have to survive those other grounds that were not considered by the district court.
That is correct, Your Honor. And I mean, of course, since we're limited on that, our contention is that he would not survive on those other grounds, as our brief has indicated.
Well, then the parade of horribles wouldn't happen then, would it?
I'm sorry?
The parade of horribles that you anticipate wouldn't happen then.
That is correct, Your Honor. I don't have any further on this particular issue. Do you have any further questions?
No, thanks.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, three brief issues. One, I think it's clear, but if the court rules in his favor, he's not going to get out of jail. He may not get out of jail his next parole hearing. He may not get out of jail the parole hearing after that. It's an injunction that will last, only applying, saying you have to apply this law. Doesn't mean that he will meet, and it doesn't mean he'll get out on that day, number one. Secondly, I've thought about this a little bit more, and if Wallace v. Quarterman is to apply, this will only apply to Mr. Kiles. It will send a message to the district courts that when they do get a petition, they can look at it and still make the same analysis. It could still be frivolous, such as the guy in Garner who had committed a murder, escaped, committed another murder to get back in prison, and they could still say that's frivolous. And I would say the court should say that it would be frivolous, even after a decision in Mr. Kyle's favor. However, if it was an individual who had made great headway in his life in jail, had gotten degrees, had done things for LULAC, done things for abused children such as Mr. Kiles, then the court would have to say, he had accommodations, Your Honor. In the record, attached to his complaint, from youth services, and it was an accommodation for exactly that. I looked at it twice myself. But Mr. Kyle's situation is unique. So it doesn't apply to all the capital cases. It applies to those capital cases that can show similar factual scenario, just as Wallace v. Quarterman said, that on the right factual basis, this can occur. And it's going to be a case by case. It won't be an opening of the floodgates or the prison doors. Each person's going to have to apply. And if you can make that initial jump for the district judge to say, you've been in prison for 5 years, you have a 50-year sentence. No, this is frivolous, as opposed to you've been in prison for 30 years or 40 years on a 90-year sentence, and you've done nothing but good during that time period. That might be a factual basis to say ex post facto would affect or it wouldn't imply invalidity. Lastly, in order to imply the invalidity of something, it must first be valid. And what I mean by that is it has to have occurred to imply the invalidity of it. Because we're seeking only prospective relief, it is impossible. It is logically impossible to imply the invalidity of something that has not obtained the status of valid. In other words, it hasn't occurred yet. So it is impossible for Heck v. Humphrey to apply to a future case, because Heck v. Humphrey applies to convictions and paroles that have occurred in the past. And based on that, I believe that solely on Mr. Kyle's case, that he should prevail. That I believe this court can make the determination based on the record we have in front of us, that we can say that he has been, that it will not apply the invalidity, and the court could even go so far as to say that ex post facto would apply. I do believe the court has the authority and jurisdiction to do that. If the court doesn't feel that that's the appropriate remedy, I believe that remand would be necessary to flesh out these issues. Thank you.